Today's episode is brought to you by Canby Foursquare Church. Since 1978, a place to grow, connect, and serve. In-person services are back with some restrictions to help ensure everyone stays safe and healthy. For the latest, visit their website at canbyfoursquare.com.
Welcome to Now Hear This, Canby,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
The Clackamas County Board of Commissioners on Thursday night sent a letter to Governor Kate Brown outlining their concerns about her decision to move area businesses backward in her reopening framework based on rising case numbers and pleading with her to consider less economically impactful alternatives. We know that reopening schools to in-person instruction coupled with businesses bringing employees and customers back results in COVID-19 cases rising, the commissioners wrote. This is not new information, and it is not surprising. However, reopening, then closing businesses and moving kids from hybrid in-person to only virtual learning would cause harm in addition to rising COVID-19 cases. The economic hardships will be felt by our communities for years. The letter also notes that hospital capacity, as well as the availability of intensive care units, ventilators, and other resources, has remained stable despite the rise in new cases. Although cases are going up, as expected, we have successfully maintained capacity and been able to provide the needed services for our most severe cases, the letter says. Hospital capacity cannot be understated. Reducing business capacity due to case counts alone, then other public health metrics should be considered, is another setback to our entire community. While all commissioners were in favor of sending the letter, none were as outspoken in their opposition to the governor's latest move as Chair Tootie Smith, who made headlines on several occasions last year before taking office for her vocal defiance of some of the state's more restrictive COVID-19 guidelines. She pointed out what she views as a disconnect between Oregon's coronavirus restrictions, which she said are no more severe than those in effect in at least 30 other states, despite the fact that Oregon has, on a per capita basis, some of the lowest COVID rates. Balance has been so lacking in this entire equation, Smith said. The balance of our economic health and our mental health is what I want to see us bring to the table. I think we've gone clear over to one side and are so worried about what the physical health impacts are that we are literally going to die because of the economic and mental health constraints that this is putting on us. Commissioner Mark Shaw also bristled at the governor's decision, calling it the straw that broke the camel's back. We cannot accept it, he said. People must be allowed to work and prosper. No amount of CARES Act money, federal money, state money can replace the industry of the people. The recent rise in cases has been attributed to after-school activities, not business activity. Why should businesses suffer? To read the full letter from county commissioners, find this story on our website, canbyfirst.com. The Canby School District is reviewing the possibility of expanding in-person learning opportunities for local students in light of recent news from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention lowering the safe distance requirements within classrooms from 6 feet to 3 feet. While thousands of Canby students returned to in-person instruction last month after nearly a full year in distance learning, they are currently limited to only 2 half-days per week due to reduced class sizes necessitated by the 6-foot social distancing requirements. Cutting those requirements in half would greatly increase the number of students Canby Schools accommodates at any one time, but it's not yet clear how the new guidance will impact official plans, or if there is enough time left in the dwindling academic year to drastically change direction just a few weeks after returning students to classrooms. We are reviewing what that change means for our in-person learning option based on classroom and cohort sizes, Superintendent Trip Goodall said in a message to families Friday. We have been looking at schedules and the number of students who are attending in person each day. Goodall said administrators will soon meet with district staff next week to determine what opportunities there may be to expand in-person learning with the new 3 feet of physical distance requirements. Throughout the school year, we have made it clear that we want to offer options to families, Goodall explained. Some may want to increase in-person learning time, while others will choose to continue learning remotely. No matter the learning model, we remain committed to academic rigor, social-emotional connections, and equitable access to opportunities. Goodall says he plans to provide more information about any potential increase in on-site instructional minutes next week. We continue to move toward our goal of providing as much in-person learning as possible for those who choose it, he said. If we can expand access to on-site instruction, we will. The Clackamas County Commissioners on Friday joined voices across the county and the globe acknowledging and calling for an end to anti-Asian American and Pacific Islander, or AAPI, discrimination, harassment, and violence that has been occurring across the country. Commissioners noted the uptick in incidents of discrimination and violence that have been reported against Asian Americans in Oregon and the United States since the onset of COVID-19, which is believed to have originated in Wuhan, China. But it is part of a larger pattern as well, officials say, one that predates the pandemic. We recognize that these events are not happening in a vacuum, but have been part of a long history of anti-Asian discrimination, commissioners said in the statement. To our Clackamas County Asian and Pacific Islander residents, we stand with you. Mass protests against anti-Asian violence have occurred in cities across the U.S. in the wake of a series of mass shootings that appeared to target Asian spas and massage parlors in Atlanta, Georgia. 8 people, 6 of whom were Asian women, were killed. We are committed to ensuring safe, healthy, and secure communities for all people of Clackamas County, commissioners said. We recognize that we have much work to do in this endeavor. We will continue to work toward the goal of ensuring that Clackamas County is a place where people thrive and have a sense of safety, connection, and belonging so that everyone is honored and celebrated for the richness and diversity they bring. Commissioners vowed to continue to engage in the effort to combat racism and listen to the needs of adversely impacted communities. They also promised to continue to partner with leaders of Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion Council, whose role is to elevate the voices of those who have been underrepresented and underserved. For a list of local resources aimed at addressing AAPI violence and discrimination, visit canbefirst.com. A bill that would make Juneteenth, a Texas-centered observance marking the end of slavery in the United States, a legal state holiday, passed in the Oregon House of Representatives this week with near unanimous support. House Bill 2168 would create an official state holiday on June 19th or Juneteenth, which commemorates the emancipation of enslaved peoples in the United States, while also celebrating the dignity, freedom, and contributions of Black Americans. Juneteenth originated in Galveston, Texas, commemorating the day when Union Army General Gordon Granger proclaimed freedom from slavery in Texas on June 19, 1865. Though President Abraham Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation had officially outlawed slavery in Texas more than 2 years earlier, enforcement of the proclamation had generally occurred only in areas reclaimed by the advance of Union troops. The holiday was introduced to Oregon in 1945 by Clara Peoples, who first celebrated the holiday during her work break at the Vanport shipyards. If passed by the Senate and signed into law, HB 2168 would officially recognize Peoples and other Black Oregonians who have made long-lasting contributions to Oregon's history and cultural legacy. We remember the legacy of Clara Peoples, mother of Juneteenth, and the annual celebrations that kept this tradition alive long before this holiday was officially recognized, Representative Janelle Bynum, Democrat Clackamas, said in a statement. In Oregon, the Legislative Assembly adopted Senate Joint Resolution 31 in 2001 to declare observance of Juneteenth, June 19th, each year, to be a day for celebration statewide of the dignity and freedom of all citizens. By making Juneteenth an official state holiday, we can both confront and acknowledge our shameful history of racial discrimination and white supremacist violence, while celebrating and recognizing the contributions Black Americans have made and continue to make in the face of systematic inequalities. House Majority Leader Barbara Smith Warner said, "Juneteenth can help Oregon look to a future of racial equality and justice." The first Juneteenth celebrations began in Texas in 1866, where Black communities gathered for parades, cookouts, prayer gatherings, historical and cultural readings, as well as musical performances. Texas made it an official state holiday in 1980, and since then, 47 other states and the District of Columbia have commemorated the day by marking it either as a state holiday or observance. Multiple agencies, including Canby Police, rushed to the aid of a lone Oregon State Trooper who multiple witnesses reported fighting to subdue a suspect on the Miley Road overpass on Interstate 5 in Wilsonville Saturday morning. According to the Clackamas County Sheriff's Office, multiple 911 calls came in at approximately 9:30 a.m. regarding a lone female trooper fighting to get a male subject into custody. The trooper herself also requested code 3 cover, which in police parlance typically signals an officer in a fight and needing immediate assistance. Clackamas County deputies, along with officers from the police departments in Canby, Gladstone, and Tualatin, rushed to the scene. The sheriff's office says the trooper was successful in apprehending the subject. Deputies and officers arrived to ensure no further assistance was needed. The suspect, 30-year-old LaCharles Collins, was arrested on a fugitive parole violation warrant out of the Wisconsin Department of Corrections for looting, child abuse, and domestic violence. He is now facing new charges for resisting arrest and driving under the influence of intoxicants. He was booked at the Clackamas County Jail without further incident.
Stay connected to what matters most this winter with unlimited high-speed internet from DirectLink. While things may look a little different this year, as we all work together to keep everyone as safe and healthy as possible, you can be confident that DirectLink's reliable network will keep your video calls, Snapchats, stories, and photos crystal clear and at your fingertips whenever you need them. In 2021, DirectLink is thankful for all of their amazing members and is proud to be your local internet, video, and voice provider for over 116 years. Joining us now is a local man who's in the business of luck, or maybe someday
He has, just a few months ago, he's launched a website called bestoregonscratchits.com, which is designed to use public data from Oregon Lottery to help users of scratch-it tickets, or scratch tickets, improve their chances of possibly winning. We welcome him now. Hi, Pierce.
Hi.
So, Pierce Lim, tell us a little bit about your site and when and how and why you started it.
Yeah, so basically what the site does is it goes out and scrapes data that the Oregon Lottery posts publicly on their website. And the cool thing about Scratch-Its is that basically when a Scratch-It's created, it goes out in this circulation, say there's 500,000 of them at printing. And the Oregon Lottery posts the odds of winning, say, a top prize in that set of 500,000. And as the Scratch-Its are bought throughout the lifetime of that circulation, those odds change. As long as the prizes haven't been won yet, the chances of, or the odds of winning that top prize get higher and higher as more tickets are sold.
Sure.
And so basically what the site does is it recalculates those odds each day as more and more tickets are sold and as prizes are won. And then it sorts the tickets by either having the best odds of a top prize, the best odds of a top three prize, or the most remaining top prizes left. And the reason I had never even bought a Scratch-It before I built the website, I just noticed.
Oh, really?
That, yeah.
This wasn't like, that's usually something that you would think, like, you're a longtime user of Scratch-Its or whatnot, and are trying to figure out a way to do the system better.
Yeah, so I'm a longtime player of jackpot games like Powerball and Megabucks. And I was just on the site, I forget why, just randomly. And I noticed this about Scratch-Its. And the reason I had never bought one before is that to me, like, I have no basis to make a decision. Like, when I look at like the 20 Scratch-Its that are sitting there in the case, I have no idea which one to pick.
Right.
So when I was on the site, I was like, a basis for a decision for me would be what are the best odds of winning a top prize. And so that's kind of where the site came from. I originally built it as just a scraping tool for myself. I didn't even have a website. I was just grabbing the data and looking at it. And then I was looking at it every day and I was like, this is pretty cool. Like, this is helpful to make that decision. And so that's where the site sort of came out of. And now, so you can look at the site and see that sorting. And then you can also subscribe to it, which just gives you an email every other day of the ranking, essentially. So that was, I'd love to have like a mobile app, but I haven't gotten there yet. So I figured, you know, if someone's walking into a store, they can look at their email real quick and see what they want to buy.
Awesome. You haven't figured out an algorithm yet to help us all win the Powerball. Still working on that one.
No, and I definitely can't guarantee that this is going to help you win. Because, for example, the one I do have to make at least one approximation when I'm doing these calculations, and that is how many initial tickets went out in the initial like circulations. So the Oregon Lottery doesn't post that. What they do post is what the initial odds were when those tickets went out. So from right. that value, I make an educated guess at what the total circulation is. So I don't want to tell people that like these are the exact perfect odds, but they're pretty close, and they give you sort of a basis for what you might want to buy if you're deciding to buy a Scratch-It.
Yeah. So I have to ask, Pierce, are you Zooming with us from an undisclosed location right now? Does Oregon Lottery have a hit out on you? Do they hate you? Have you heard from them, or is this the kind of thing? Oh, you have.
That's a great question. Yeah. No, I published the site and I posted it on Reddit, on the Oregon subreddit, maybe a week or two after it had been live. And I got an email from someone in marketing at the Oregon Lottery, maybe just a couple days after I posted it. And he was really excited about it because it's, you know, ultimately I'm getting people to buy more Scratch-Its and directing a lot of traffic back to their site. But they did have some like legal things they wanted me to fix about the site, which was just, I think one thing they have trouble with is like people build stuff like I built here, and people go and use it and think that the Oregon Lottery owns it. And so when they have like support questions, they go and talk to the Oregon Lottery. So he wanted me to make it very clear that I wasn't affiliated.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But other than that, they really like what I'm doing, and they're trying to kind of move towards a more digital, I guess, form of marketing, or using the lottery, buying tickets, that sort of thing.
Cool. That's great. So it wasn't a cease and desist.
No.
That's great.
I thought it could be potentially, but no, it wasn't.
Yeah. Awesome. What else, what have you heard from Redditors or from other people? Before we started recording, you mentioned that you were kind of encouraged to make this more public as well, because a lot of your friends were using it and finding it helpful.
Yeah. So the feedback I've gotten from just anonymous people has been really good. There's been a few people who have said, you know, I went out and bought, you know, $100 worth of scratches on this day, and I'm up, you know, $80 because I use the site. I haven't had anyone give me like a losing story yet. I'm sure they're out there. So I don't want to guarantee anything, but everyone thinks it's really cool for a lot of the same reasons of like, I want to buy a scratcher, but I'm not sure which one to buy. And then the other interesting thing is like a number of my friends have obviously used it. And these are people who are sort of in the same boat as me of like, I had never bought a scratchet. I never planned to. This sort of gave me a reason to.
Yeah, sure.
So,
just to see if it would work, right?
Yeah. So to me, it's a site that should be used purely for entertainment. To me, like the lottery is one of the cheapest forms of entertainment that you can, especially like jackpot games. I mean, $2, you can kind of fantasize about it, and it's real cheap. And the money that you end up spending, even if you lose, it ends up going to a good cause. So it's better than going to a casino or something like that.
Yeah, that's kind of how I think of it too, right? It's not like, it's wrong to think of it like it's an investment or anything like that. Like this right. is not how you should, if you choose to play the lottery, that's not how you should do it. It's more like, to me, it's like you're buying, like you're buying, kind of how you describe it, like you're buying a ticket to Daydream. Like you buy that right. ticket, and that kind of gives you license to, you know, until you right. lose to kind of think, if I did win, here's what I would do. You know, I have a real chance. So
yeah, like I can't think of another form of like entertainment out there that's like that. Like I spend $2 and then I have like, I can daydream about this thing and it's entertaining. And then if I lose, you know, it's not just going into someone's pocket. It's going into like state funded things, which is pretty cool. So
yeah, I love that. I mean, not that I was nervous, but I mean, a part of me might've been a little nervous coming to this interview that it was going to be some guy in his, you know, mom's basement, like with all this like scratching on the walls, like I've got to win, you know, I'm so close to the $1 million, but yeah, obviously that's not you. Do you have any plans for kind of where you might take this or where this might go? Or that it might spin into something else, or just something fun to do on the side?
Yeah, I mean, it started as something fun to do on the side, and it's still there like that. I have a lot of things I want to do with the site, a lot of features in mind. I'm collecting a lot of extra data that I'm not even displaying on the site, just because I did this pretty quickly. And so to me, it was, you know, I wanted to get the site out there, see what the interest was like at sort of this level. And if it gets to a certain point, then, well, I may, you know, go a different route with it. That's more of like a legitimate company type of thing.
Yeah.
But for now, I mean, someone using the site can be certain that like, if they subscribe, they'll get this email every other day. The site will be there. You know, it doesn't cost me much money to keep the site up, so it's not something that like I'm just going to turn off someday,
right?
So yeah, the hope is that it would go to this next level, but we'll see.
Yeah.
I've got about 400 subscribers right now, which for I don't know how long has it been, like 2.5 months, I feel pretty happy about that.
That's great. So. I wonder if there's anything that you've either thought about or that's maybe been suggested to you as far as like, you know, I don't know anything about this. This may already be a thing, but like sort of like crowdsourcing the lottery? Like when you talk about Reddit, and obviously, you know, in the recent news, that's been kind of a thing with the stock market, right? Where large groups of people can kind of align to do things that the market's not expecting, or that in this case, the lottery wouldn't be expecting, and kind of break the system in a way to their benefit. Is that something that's been on your radar at all? That like, if you took your 400 subscribers and said, okay, let's all put in this amount of money and buy this ticket, and then we'll get the prize or whatever.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that, because people actually already do that. Not because
I figured. Yeah.
So this is something I've thought about since doing the site. Obviously, like, theoretically, if you could go out and buy every ticket, you could guarantee, right, that you're going to win. But they're dispersed all over Oregon, right? So it'd be very hard to do. But there is, so it was the guy that I talked to at the lottery that actually told me about this. There's this like group of retired guys that does the same thing I'm doing here, like monitors the odds across the entire nation. Now, it's not public, it's just something they do privately. And they go to different states when it gets a certain level, and they road trip around the state buying every ticket they can find for a certain
for scratchers.
Obviously they don't always win, but when they do, like, so they did it in Oregon a couple years ago, and they, I think they spent something like $40,000 buying tickets and then ended up winning 250. So I don't want to encourage anyone to do this, but
right, that's not prescriptive. Interesting,
because that is a huge risk.
You know what, you get to see different parts of the country as well, probably meet some interesting people, so I bet that's a fun life for them.
It would be fun, and I think what someone needs to think before they would consider doing something like that is, I am at a level of wealth where I could take $40,000 and light it on fire and it wouldn't matter.
Right.
Don't do it if you're not at that level of wealth.
Most road trips fall well beyond, well under that line. So,
yeah, exactly. So, anyways, yeah, that is theoretically possible, but could you do it? You could. I don't really have any plans to try and get my subscribers to do something like that. I just hope that they, you know, it's fun for them.
Awesome.
And that's kind of the goal.
Awesome. Well, Pierce, thank you so much for taking time out to talk to us. I think it's really cool. I love this endeavor of just, you know, taking a closer look at things that we kind of take for granted, like, oh, the lottery works this way, things work this way, and just pulling the curtain back a little, if you will, and kind of showing the things, often math, that runs every part of our life, right? I think that's always interesting to see. Pierce, thanks again. Is there anything else that you'd like to share with us before you go?
I think that's it. I mean, yeah, check out the site, go out and subscribe if you're interested. Doesn't cost anything, and I promise I won't spam you. But yeah, that's it. Thanks for the interview.
Yeah, so that's bestoregonscratchits.com, all spelled out. And is that the main thing, Pierce? All the information and way to subscribe is on there, but there's no like social media or Facebook page or anything like that?
No, and there probably will be in the future. There's also like a contact page. There's a How It Works page that explains a little more about how we calculate the odds and that sort of thing. So if you're interested, go check that out. But yeah, the subscribe buttons are really obvious.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Pierce, and good luck.
All right, thank you.
Joining us now is Donna Ellison of Ellison Team Homes, a firm serving all across the Portland metro area with three realtors based right here in Canby. Donna, can you tell us how Ellison Team Homes started?
I started in real estate. I grew up with my dad. He was a realtor. Mm-hmm. So I'm a second generation broker, and I grew up with him on weekends. And I learned a lot eventually working with him for several years and then going out on my own. Our family moved to Canby a couple of years ago, but we really didn't know how it was going to go. And within the first probably 3 months of being here, we literally fell head over heels in love with this place. We love the community, the spirit here. The first Christmas at Waite Park, I was literally crying because everybody was walking around saying Merry Christmas and people were drinking hot chocolate and we got in a carriage ride with the horse and it was just too much. You just realize it's special here. Real estate's always been my passion. It is my professional love. I enjoy the people, the relationships. So much comes out of kind of the intensity that you spend with people. You're really up in their business for a period of time. And sometimes it's a couple months, sometimes it's a couple years, sometimes it's a lifetime.
Yeah.
I feel very blessed at this point to have people that have been with me for almost my entire career. Mm-hmm. Clients that have bought and sold maybe 2, 3, 4, or 5 homes. I have one client that's bought and sold 8 homes with me.
Yeah.
3 generations. It's a beautiful business. It makes for a very full life. Mm-hmm.
How can people find you?
How can they not, really? we have a website, www.ellisonteamhomes.com.
Well, thank you, Donna.
Thank you for having me.
All right, joining us now is Bjorn Leitinen. He is a local Canby athlete and a new MMA fighter. Recently had his debut just last night, and I think it's going to be one for the record books. Hey, Bjorn, how are you feeling, man?
I'm actually feeling pretty good.
Yeah.
My arm's all numbed up, so I'm not in any pain.
I bet.
Just really bored at this point.
Yeah, I bet. Still stuck in the hospital, recovering from the fight, which we'll talk about. You got your IV all hooked back up?
Yeah.
Popped out there while we were closing your door. Well, gosh, man, why don't you start? Obviously, we're going to talk about the fight, but I'd love to hear just how you got into MMA. And I know you've been training, I guess, all through quarantine is what I heard, just preparing for this. Tell me about it.
Yeah, I found MMA. Just by chance. I was
you were a swimmer, right? In high school.
That was my main sport for most of my life is swimming. But in high school I was getting bored with swimming. I like physical sports. I kind of wanted to wrestle, but it wasn't quite my thing, and it was the same sport as or is the same season as swimming, so it didn't work out too well. But I started watching fights. I started watching street fights on YouTube, I think junior year of high school. And that got me really interested in fighting. And I didn't even, I wasn't really introduced to the MMA world. I just eventually found it through Kimbo Slice, I think, who was a street fighter that went into the UFC. But I just fell in love with it instantly. And I thought I wanted to try it out, and I tried it out and I loved it.
Yeah.
So I've been training since the beginning of June, and I've been going hard every day that I can.
Awesome. Yeah. I mean, swimming is a great sport. Tons of great athletes do it, but they don't let you hit people. At least that's what I hear. I didn't swim myself, but
yeah. not as much, at least.
And you've been training, I guess, was it primarily with Chris Lancioni, or I know he's been involved. You've been working with him some.
Yes. He is my coach. And every training partner I've had has been through him or with him.
Awesome. What has that training been like? Can you tell us a little bit? Is it, obviously I know it's a completely different sport to swimming. Is some of the conditioning and whatnot that you do similar to swimming, or is it just totally different stuff?
It's completely different. There's nothing like, the kind of tired that you are when you have somebody on top of you trying to hold you down and you're just trying to get out of the position you're in.
Yeah.
Nothing really compares to it. You have to have a lot of mental fortitude just to survive that, because it's more up here than it is physical.
Sure.
But it's been a great experience. I love it. Every day Chris pushes me to my limits, and every day I try to push myself, and it's a great experience.
Awesome.
I've grown a lot in the last year.
Some of that endurance mentality, do you feel like you got some of that from swimming? I mean, that's an endurance sport as well.
Oh yeah, for sure. I got a lot of my work ethic from swimming, just from growing up playing sports in general.
Yeah.
It's something that I love doing. I like exerting myself because I like the feeling that you get after. I like the endorphins.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you got into training and whatnot in June. Obviously, a lot of things being up in the air at that point for all sports, including MMA. Were you just kind of going in the hopes that obviously eventually things would get back to normal? Or what was your kind of thought process for beginning when you did?
I began when I did because things weren't normal, because I was starting to get really, really lazy, and I had the perfect excuse to go home and not leave home, just play video games and eat all day.
Yeah.
But I already knew at that point that I wanted to fight. And so there was no way I could just live with myself every day knowing that I was doing nothing when I could be making progress towards something bigger.
Wow. That's awesome. That's really inspiring. I wish I had talked to you in June. Maybe I'd be in a little bit better shape right now, but maybe going forward, I can improve. There's still hope for me, I hope.
There's still time.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, folks that are just listening to this, obviously we buried the lead. I can see you. You're in a hospital in Montana right now, in a hospital bed, and your arm is in a cast. Tell us about your first fight and what happened, man.
Okay, so
your first real competition, right? Obviously you've sparred and done all that training.
Yeah. It's been a trip. It's been a really great experience all around, even with the arm. I'm still really? Having a good time in here. Yeah.
Yeah.
The blood pressure thing's doing its own thing, but that's okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, I got the call from Chris on Tuesday when I was at when I was on my lunch at work, because I'm still working full time at a marble and granite warehouse.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I got called at a little after noon, and I had 3 days to drop 20 pounds if I wanted to take this fight. And a pro fighter, Jorge Masvidal, if you follow fighting at all, he was bragging about dropping the same weight in 6 days. But I did it for my first weight cut. I'd never cut weight before for anything because I didn't really wrestle or anything. But I dropped 20 in 3 days. So that was really intense, and it was hard, but it was fun.
Wow.
It was a great experience.
And you just really wanted this, obviously. I mean,
Yeah.
That's a pretty clear illustration of how badly you were looking forward to this.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So where did it take place, Montana?
Yeah, it took place in Great Falls, Montana.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a Four Seasons arena here.
Okay.
And it was a great arena. It was a great show.
Yeah. I saw the video from your fight. I don't know much about the card or where you kind of fell in it. I don't even know your opponent. Maybe you can tell us. But it looked like a great ring. I mean, it looked like what you normally see in all the UFC kind of MMA matches. So.
Yeah, it had a pretty good lineup. There was a lot of variety in weight class. And there was a tournament going on. I wasn't a part of the tournament because I just wasn't. But my opponent was a wrestler from Washington, actually. He goes to Mercenary or something like the Mercenary. I don't know. He goes to some Tri-Cities MMA school.
Okay.
That one of my friends actually suggested to me when I was looking at schools like a year ago before I found Chris. But yeah, I didn't really know very much about him going into it. I knew he was a wrestler, and my plan was to try and keep my distance, but yeah. I decided to throw a leg kick or a body kick, and he caught it.
Yeah.
And I broke my arm on that first fall.
Right.
The first throw. Have you seen the fight?
I have. It's unbelievable. So yeah, right at the beginning, you can tell that he's a wrestler. He's trying to grapple you, get you down. It kind of happens really fast, but you sort of land in this weird freak way, just all your weight and all the force he was throwing you down on that one right arm. Is that basically what happened?
Yeah. So it happened really fast, but he's a really good wrestler. So he's got some pretty advanced throws. So his was actually a throw that I hadn't seen very often because of the way he was pushing and pulling.
Yeah.
It had multiple parts to it. And so at first I was reacting properly, but then it caught me by surprise. And I just posted my arm out to catch myself, and my arm was straight and it snapped right in the middle. Nightstick fracture. It was gnarly, but yeah. I knew that the ref didn't see it yet, 'cause I came down right on top of it.
Right.
So I tucked it in. I heard it break and I felt it break. Obviously yeah. it was not hidden to me,
yeah.
But I decided I wanted to hide it from the ref. And so I tucked it under and I started using both arms, 'cause I wasn't sure if it was my elbow that had been hyperextended or snapped, or if it was my arm right in the middle of the forearm, but it was the forearm. So that made it harder to fight, his grips, but I was still able to get up a couple of times. And, I knew the ref hadn't seen it yet. And, I don't think my opponent saw it either, but I decided to keep that elbow nice and tight, or try to at least. And my plan was to get up, break his grips, maybe get a little bit of space, and just start throwing as hard as I could with my left hand.
Were you not in pain? We're going to show the video. It's unbelievable. I mean, it's like, however you try to hide it, it's obvious your arm is snapped. Like, it's at weird angles.
Yes, but if I was able to knock him out before they saw it, I would still get the win. And so if I can get the win, I'm going for the win.
Wow, man. That's incredible.
But yeah, I was going to keep on going, and then he got a couple more takedowns. And as soon as I was on my back, I knew there was nothing I could do, because I couldn't get on that side and put any pressure on that arm.
Yeah.
Thank you. But yeah, that's about it right there. Is as soon as I was on my back, I tapped, and the announcers didn't know what was going on yet. They were really confused when I tapped. But then they saw my arm, and one of them freaked out a little bit, but it was pretty funny.
Yeah. And so from there, I believe Chris took you to the hospital, drove you over.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, he did. We had a makeshift splint. It was really janky, but it did its job. It worked.
Yeah. You asked to try to do another fight, kind of sneak into another card, but they wouldn't let you. No, I'm kidding.
I would.
Oh man. They've been taking care of you over there at the hospital?
Yeah, they've been taking good care of me. And my coach and my team have been here, and my family and all my friends have been making sure I'm okay. And I have a friend here from college, and so he's hanging out with me too.
Awesome. Did they have to do surgery, kind of get things set right?
Yeah, they did surgery this morning, and it went really well. So I think I'm gonna have a nice full recovery. Hopefully it's quick.
Yeah.
I want to get back in the gym as soon as possible. We're actually working on setting up some workouts for while I'm still healing.
Okay.
Doing a lot of core and lower body.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And left arm.
Yeah.
Right. Very cool. Awesome, man. Well, I just think it's incredible. Really look forward to your career. Hope you're able to get back soon. You're obviously just such a warrior, man. It's really inspiring and really cool to see. Anything else that you'd like to share?
I think that's all.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for taking time out from your hospital, man. And best of luck to you.
And I needed the entertainment.
Yeah, I bet. Well, I hope I was able to help a little bit.
You did great. Thank you.
Thanks, Bjorn.
Hey, Frankie, you okay? You seem kind of down.
Yeah, I'm just bummed. Miss going to the Wild Hair. I know you can still get takeout and all, but it's just not the same.
You know they're open again, right?
What?
Yeah, they've been open for a while now. Don't you cover, like, the news?
Hey, I'm only human, okay?
Okay. Well, I can tell you that the Wild Hair and their amazing staff are thrilled to be open again for delicious meals and fun times. They are strictly following all the recommended safety guidelines, and they have the only covered outdoor patio in Canby, with lots of tables spaced 6 feet apart and umbrellas also spaced 6 feet apart, and fantastic ambiance. And hey, if you're still more comfortable with carryout, they can hook you up there too. Find their menu and other information online at thewildhairsaloon.net or check them out in Canby in Oregon City. Anything to add, Frankie? Frankie? Oh, I guess he left. God, he must have been really hungry. Now Hear This Canby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website, olivia13.com.
Now Hear This Canby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe. And we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.